There have been at least 15 Ukrainian drone attacks against 13 different oil refineries across Russia.
Russia relies very heavily on its oil industry. I believe more than a third of Russian state revenue comes from its oil industry. It's something that strikes at the heart of the Russian regime. It's something that forces Russia to think about where it's putting its air defenses, which creates gaps and opportunities. It gives an incentive for countries that have been buying Russian oil to look elsewhere.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Ukraine, a show where the newsroom of the Kyiv Independent explains Ukraine's biggest events in just under 30 minutes. I'm your host, Anastasia Lopatin. Today, we're talking about Ukraine's recent drone campaign against Russian oil facilities. I'm joined by Marcel Plikta, a security expert at the University of St. Andrews and a former intelligence analyst at the U.S. Department of Defense. Marcel, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Before we get into the interview, I'll remind you guys to please subscribe to the Kyiv Independent wherever you're listening to this show, whether that's on YouTube or on audio platforms. Leave comments, reviews, like our content. It takes just a second for you, but goes a really long way for us because this is what helps algorithms promote our content so more people will stay informed about Russia's war in Ukraine. So we brought you here today because it's been reported that since the beginning of 2024, so in the last 2.5 months, there have been at least 15 Ukrainian drone attacks against 13 different oil refineries across Russia, as well as some oil depots. And some attacks happened as far as 900 kilometers away from the Ukrainian border, which is pretty impressive. So all of this seems like quite a deliberate campaign. And it's also clear that Ukraine has been prioritizing Russia's oil infrastructure over Russian, say, ammunition depots or military bases. So I have several questions right from the beginning. Why do you think that is? Why are we prioritizing oil infrastructure? And why is all of this happening now?
Yeah, well, it's actually started earlier. At least the idea of targeting oil started quite early in the conflict. I think the very first attack on a refinery was in June of 2022 by Ukraine. However, what we're seeing now is a dramatic increase in the number of oil facilities targeted relative to other facilities with long-range drones. There's a couple of reasons for that. On a military level, these sites tend to be much less defended than a military base or a more traditional military target. So consequently, it's more likely that a drone would be able to hit the target without being intercepted. On a more strategic, grand level, Russia relies very heavily on its oil industry. I believe more than a third of Russian state revenue comes from its oil industry. And these are facilities that aren't designed to have, to sustain, attacks on them. They're not hardened in any way. And you have a lot of expensive components that are quite easy to damage with a small amount of explosives. So in a sense, they're almost a perfect target for Ukraine because it's something that strikes at the heart of the Russian regime. It's something that forces Russia to think about where it's putting its air defenses, which creates gaps and opportunities and potentially forces them to, make places like Engels Air Base, which was attacked by a drone today, less defended if they've had to move from one place to another their air defenses. So there's a couple of different benefits for Ukraine to do it. Why now? This is just my opinion, but I think we've seen an increase in the scale of Ukrainian production of these drones. Whereas before, if you think to the drone attacks on Moscow and St. Petersburg in mid-2023, overall, there weren't that many drones utilized. And so if production has continued and they've been able to stockpile and Ukraine's drone manufacturers are now able to produce enough to have a constant campaign to pressure the Russian oil industry, it's likely it'll do more damage.
So the Russian media outlet, The Insider, reported that at least 8 oil refineries have sustained real damage. What else do we know about the impact of these operations? What kind of damage has been reported?
Yeah, in some cases, we've gotten very lucky and social media and other places have shown, videos of either the drone's impact or the aftermath. And with at least some of these facilities, you can see very severe damage, right? Large fires, attacks on, cooling towers and other elements of a refinery that are both key to the refinery's ability to function and also very difficult to replace, very expensive to replace. Sometimes it's, specialized components. In other cases, we only have the Russian government's word for it, which, you can't always take at face value. And so, you know, you'll have regional governors say that, you know, four drones were intercepted on the way to a refinery, which could well be true. But we also wouldn't necessarily know if those drones were successful in their mission and if they did any damage.
Let's talk about the economic impacts as well, because as you've mentioned, oil is really at the heart of the Russian regime. It's where a lot of the Russian revenue comes from, despite the sanctions and so on. So what have we seen in the oil market because of these attacks?
The oil market overall, I don't think it's had a massive impact yet. You know, it could very easily have a massive impact depending on how long these attacks sustain. I believe one of the a representative of one of the major oil companies, not in Russia but globally, told Bloomberg that it cut Russia's ability to refine oil by about 600,000 barrels a day. And for context, I believe Russia is somewhere between 10 and 11 million barrels per day that it produces in oil. So it's a significant amount, but it's definitely not the majority. And I think that you'll see a lot of commentators and experts, and we'll talk about bringing the Russian oil industry, you know, to its knees or causing petroleum shortages. That's not necessarily the intent of the campaign. You know, but even something more limited, you know, you're talking 600,000 barrels per day, you know, oil is at about $84 or higher per barrel. So that's a significant economic impact with very, very few drones that are very inexpensive.
I've seen some commentators talking about the fact that the oil prices have already increased slightly, which can actually be a problem for Ukraine because that could pose a problem to the West. Generally speaking, nobody wants oil prices to go up because everything else increases in price as well. So there's kind of this double game that's happening that on one hand, it really serves Ukraine to be hitting those oil refineries because it's hurting Russia. But it can also cause some conflict between Ukraine and Western allies, perhaps. Do you think that could be a problem?
It might be a problem. I'm not too concerned about it for a couple of reasons. The first is that Russia's not the only producer of oil. It might cause short-term increases in price, but it also might cause some countries like India, for instance, who's a major importer of Russian fossil fuels, to look elsewhere. Recently, they've been buying more American oil, for instance.
And that could actually be a good thing since we're trying globally as the collective West, you know, they're trying to cut back on the dependency on Russian gas and oil.
Yeah, it does. It gives an incentive for countries that have been buying Russian oil to look elsewhere. For some of Ukraine's partners, higher oil prices can be beneficial at times because it makes certain kinds of fossil fuel extraction in the US and Canada more affordable. Depending on sort of the way that oil is extracted, it can be more or less expensive. And when the price of oil is high, it suddenly becomes economical for Canadian companies and American companies to do that. So there's it's not a settled thing. There's a mix of potential outcomes.
And what about the impact on the battlefield? Because you've mentioned that, you know, bringing the Russian oil industry to its knees is not necessarily the intent of the campaign. And as far as I'm seeing, one of the intents, at least, is to hurt Russian supply lines, right?
Yeah.
So are we seeing that that's actively happening? Are we achieving the goals?
I think not, you know, not yet. I mean, this is a, you know, while there have been a dozen or so attacks since the beginning of the year, The bulk of them have occurred sort of in the past, you know, week and a half from when we're recording. I think it remains to be seen. You know, these things take a little bit of time to filter down. I think it's also that because a big way that the Russian government makes revenue is off exporting this oil, you know, it could come in an indirect way where there's a decrease in funding, and that leads to you know, fewer resources. The other potential impact is what I was saying earlier about Russia having to move its air defense around. That could create a lot of opportunities for Ukraine, not just in its use of drones, but in other munitions. If you know, depots and supply lines are suddenly less defended by air defense because they're sitting, you know, near a bunch of refineries doing nothing, there are more opportunities for Ukraine to take advantage of. And I think that's where you would start to see a major difference.
So let's get into the technicalities a little bit. Tell me about the drones that Ukraine has been using, especially the ones that we've reportedly used to hit targets as far as I've said, 900 kilometers away, which is pretty far. What do we know about these weapons?
The first thing to know about Ukraine's, I call them one-way attack drones. Every single expert has their own, you know, their own terminology. I use one-way attack or OWA. The first thing to understand about their, you know, the Ukrainian industry is that it's very decentralized. You have a lot of different firms operating semi-independently, and that's a big advantage in a lot of ways because it makes it more difficult for Russia to, you know, attack production sites. It leads to more innovation, and it's more of an opportunity to help, you know, Ukrainian domestic manufacturing. But what it means is that there's a lot of different models and different kinds of drones at play. And so it's hard to determine without, you know, in cases where there's no photographic evidence, what specific drone was used. That said, there are several patterns that we see. In general, the longer range a drone is, the less likely it is that it has a direct connection to the ground. So we know that it would be using a different way to navigate. That could be GPS, like satellite navigation. It could be what's called inertial navigation. So it sort of does a math equation. It knows how fast it's flying. It knows where it started. And it sort of works out roughly mm-hmm. where it's going. And then you see, not necessarily in the case of Ukraine, but in general, you could see more things coming into play later, like having a camera that sees the terrain below and determines where it is based on that. So you have that feature. You also have consistently longer ranges. This is not technically a very difficult thing to achieve, to make a drone fly 900 kilometers. You know, these are engines that tend to be between, you know, 15 and 50 horsepower propeller engines. The challenge is, you know, that when you have an engine doing that, it tends to go slower than, say, a missile or a regular manned aircraft. And so there's a bit of a trade-off there. But the benefit is that it's significantly less expensive. The last thing to note is that there's been, you know, it's usually been smaller propeller engines. Increasingly, we are seeing some models come out with jet engines. And this could potentially increase the cost of each individual drone. At the same time, it could also produce, much better speed, which makes it more likely that it'll hit the target, or at least less opportunity for Russia to intercept it. The ones that we've seen in these most recent attacks have tended to look the same, where they have a distinct, they have a propeller in the rear and they have a distinct tail. But functionally, despite who's making it, most of these drones tend to function pretty similarly just because of the mission they've been given and the technology at play, what kind of technology is commercially available, what's available to Ukraine. These sorts of things tend to govern how a Ukrainian manufacturer would make a drone with this kind of range and this kind of capability.
Ukraine, of course, doesn't have some of the longest range weapons that we've been asking for since the very beginning of the war. So I'm thinking some of the long range missiles and missile systems. This increased production of drones that we're seeing, is it something that could be kind of balancing it out for Ukraine in terms of this vulnerability? Can drones be used in a similar fashion and even maybe more effectively than some of the missile systems?
Yes and no. So it's definitely the case that part of what's motivated Ukraine to pursue one-way attack drones with long ranges has been a lack of domestically produced missiles in Ukraine. Obviously, there's Neptune and some other examples, but not necessarily at the scale that would make such a campaign viable. And then a lack of, or not necessarily a lack of support, but a reticence in the West about providing weapons beyond a certain range. And, you know, initially it was, you know, the range of HIMARS, and then it was the range of Taurus, and you know, we'll see where it goes mm-hmm. from there. But this is all the West figuring out how much, and Ukraine's partners generally figuring out, you know, what kinds of weapons they want to give Ukraine. This has been a years-long process. And in the meantime, Ukrainian leaders, the Ukrainian military, they need to be able to strike military targets, critical infrastructure targets in occupied territories and in Russia itself. And so OWA drones do fill that gap. They also fill that gap in a way that suits Ukrainian manufacturing, because so much investment has already gone into drone technology. And it meets it at much lower cost. Procuring, you know, a missile with 900 kilometer range and procuring them in bulk could be a tricky proposition. Not as tricky a proposition when it comes to drones. There are trade-offs with that. The trade-off is that, you know, a drone is less survivable usually than a missile, and usually goes slower, and often the payload is smaller. However, for targets like a refinery or targets like an ammunition depot, which are very flammable, kind of very famously flammable, it doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily matter if the warhead is smaller. And it doesn't necessarily if the speed is slower, since these facilities don't move. There's no chance that it's going to move between when the drone is launched and when it reaches its target. And so that it does limit a little bit what Ukraine can do with their drones. They can't necessarily dynamically target with them yet, that we've observed. But it does give a lot for Russia to worry about.
Could Ukraine use those drones in the future against Russian military personnel, Russian bases across the front line?
Yeah, they already have. Not just in the front line, although definitely at the front line. But there's sort of, you know, for a long time in this conflict, there have been Russian facilities that could operate with impunity because they were far enough back from the front and they knew Ukraine didn't have the range to reach them. What drones allow Ukraine to do is to threaten those sites and those facilities. And it's forced Russia to be, you know, more careful, more cautious with its operations. And this is especially the case with air bases recently. We had the recent attack on Engels base, and then Russia's Engels air base, and then a prior one some time ago, maybe a year ago, actually. And that's a real benefit to Ukraine, because it means that Russian planners have to account for the idea that these bases that they thought were safe could suddenly come under attack. And that creates a lot of complications for them.
So is Ukraine doing an exceptionally good job at attacking this oil infrastructure, or is Russia just not doing a good enough job of protecting it? Because, I mean, we've seen those memes about Russian air defense systems in Moscow being placed on roofs or like some soldiers patrolling the roofs to allegedly shoot down the drones. There has been a lot of, you know, jokes going around in regards to the Russian air defenses. So how does that come into play here? Is it really as bad as the jokes sound?
No, I mean, Russia in general, when it talks about its air defense systems, tends to be over optimistic about its performance, both because they want to show off their power, and because often they want to export a lot of these systems to other countries. So it benefits them to have a narrative that their air defense is perfect. Mm-hmm. That said, their air defense systems are not bad by any stretch of the imagination. What the challenge is that we're dealing with such vast spaces, such that their air defense can't necessarily cover everything. And if Ukraine launches more than one drone, you also have the possibility that, you know, if there's only one air defense system there, maybe it can get one or two, but maybe it can't get the third one. So, you know, Ukraine is being very smart in its employment of them, certainly smarter than Russia has with their Shaheds, right, which have targeted mostly civilians and mostly targets that don't necessarily help the war effort. By contrast, Ukraine is targeting Russia's ability to earn money and, you know, their military targets, right? Like many in Crimea depots, things that help Russia prosecute the war. At the same time, it's difficult for Russian planners to account for defending all of these different targets, right? Because in addition to defending every single base and every single depot across Russia, now they have to worry about every single refinery. And then, you know, what if Ukraine decides to switch to targeting something else, right? Like mining or some other part of the infrastructure. That's something that Russia would also have to account for. So it's Ukraine presenting Russia with a dilemma that's hard to get out of very intelligently, and Russia not necessarily having the capability to solve or to defeat every single kind of attack.
So what would Russia have to do? Will it need to dramatically increase the production of those systems, their defense systems?
Yes, some of them, you know, it's you know, Russian production of war material, sort of, there's a lot of speculation about how effective they have been during wartime at producing new material. And with air defense systems, you tend to have a lot of very technical components, or you're dealing with older systems that don't function as well, like from the Soviet era, like the 60s and 70s. The solution probably that Russia is going to go for is going to be a mix of electronic warfare, maybe positioning older systems at sites that they think are less at risk, and maybe more advanced sites that are in sites that are more at risk. And then also, I mean, they might try and do what Ukraine has done, which is set up mobile teams that are able to travel very quickly right. along the flight path. They might attempt to do that mm-hmm. as well. It's hard to predict. It also depends on the tempo of Ukrainian drone operations. If the tempo slows down after this point or a bit, they might not react at all. If they think that the short-term threat has passed.
The big hope in Ukraine, it seems like, at least among the civil society and various frontline commentators, is mm-hmm. that these operations are going to force Russia to move the air defense systems that it has along the front line to protect these oil refineries, or I don't know, places like Belgorod, where Ukrainian operations mm-hmm. have been reportedly causing some havoc recently. So all of this, we hope, is an effort to get the air defenses away from the front line so that Ukraine can hit Russian positions there. Do you think that that's going to happen?
To a certain extent, Russia is always going to have air defense along the front line because it has to support its combat operations. It needs to be able to threaten Ukraine's air force, and it needs to be able to threaten Ukrainian non-strike drones, right? Just the regular, you know, spy ISR drones and things. So there is a tremendous need for Russia to keep its air defense at the front. At the same time, you know, it becomes a question for Russia of how much it can spare. And when they start making that calculation, that opens gaps, that opens opportunities for Ukraine to take advantage of. So if in a hypothetical scenario, right, they remove an electronic warfare system from an area, suddenly Ukrainian soldiers in that area have more freedom to operate their own drones and conduct their frontline operations. The key here is that these drone attacks are a very cheap way to do this. So you're talking about, I think I've from Ukrainian sources, I've heard as low as, you know, $50,000 per unit, and then sort of higher numbers, right? Like $200,000 per unit.
That doesn't seem like a lot.
And if it saves, you know, if it saves a Ukrainian pilot's life, right, it's invaluable. And so much like the drone boats, right, drone aircraft and long range strike are very cheaply making it harder for Russia on the battlefield. But, you know, that it's never going to be the case that Russia will have no air defense near the front. It's just there'll be more gaps, more vulnerabilities. It'll be easier to exploit.
We're now, as always, going to be moving to the community question of today's episode. You guys should go to kiminddependent.com/membership to subscribe to the Kim Independent. You get really cool perks like access to exclusive events and discussions with editors and journalists, and a chance to send us in questions before every single episode of the podcast. And we try to incorporate as many of your questions as we can. So this time, the community member is wondering, does Ukraine have the capability to swarm drones on a target? And would that technique be more or less effective than individual precision attacks?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Beyond just Ukraine, right, there's been a lot of discussion about drone swarms. Generally, when experts, right, when scholars talk about drones swarms, they're saying specifically that the drones have the capability to talk to each other, to communicate with each other, and to react semi-dynamically. That's still a nascent capability, even for, you know, sort of the most advanced militaries of the world. They're still working on that technology. I think there's definitely the potential for it to happen in Ukraine. For these specific strikes, the long range strikes, I think there are a couple challenges. The first would be that you would be introducing a lot more cost. You know, if there's more components or more software that needs to be written for, you know, the drones to communicate with each other. And if the Ukrainian armed forces already know what they want to hit, there's sort of a limited value to giving them that sort of dynamism. And it also introduces a little bit more vulnerabilities. So if the drones, you know, need to be communicating with each other constantly, they're emitting signals, and those signals can be blocked or detected. And that could increase its vulnerability. It's not that swarming is a bad idea, and in fact we'll probably see swarming in the next couple of years, right, in future conflicts or in different military contexts. But for these specific attacks, I don't think we'll be seeing swarms, and I don't necessarily think that swarming will pay off. That said, there will still be multiple drones likely launched at once. They just won't be talking to each other.
Just to be clear, when we talk about the term, you know, swarming by mm-hmm. drones, it's not just, I don't know, 10, 15 drones mm-hmm. being sent at a location, you know, something mm-hmm. similar like Russia perhaps does in Ukraine in civilian areas, where we have like a group of drones coming at mm-hmm. one time. That's not the same. That's just a lot of drones coming at one time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if you're on the ground, it's sort of, you know, it's still very something to be very
concerned.
You don't
care about the terminology.
Yeah. They're not writing an academic treatise on it. But in these specific kinds of attacks, often it'll be, you know, they'll either be operated separately or they'll have separate missions. They won't necessarily be fully, you know, like the Terminator, you know, fully autonomous that way.
Okay. Marcel, thank you so much for being here. It was super interesting to listen to.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, no, it's good to be back.
You can find our show on YouTube and all audio platforms every Saturday. If you like this episode, please subscribe to us and like our content wherever you're listening to this show. Go to giveindependent.com/membership to become a member of our community and support our work. And also follow us on social media on X, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening.